look at advanced facilitator training section. I'm not going to go line by line on this. Tons of it. I mean, it's so clear you can read it, and you've heard enough now that you would probably understand it. So I want to hit and miss. I'm going to hit and miss. So let's look at the very first things that have to be, in my opinion, in place for you to actually go to a traumatic memory. Now, this doesn't necessarily have to be in place if you're just going to try to encounter the Lord, or if you're going to try to just spend time with him or talk about some little something. But if you're going to go to a deep-seated traumatic memory, number one, you must be able to connect with Yeshua or the Father or the Holy Spirit in an experiential way. One of the most effective ways that I've found to connect with the Lord, especially if you're struggling, is through sharing a time with whoever's with you when the Lord encountered you and you were able to perceive that he was with you. And you share that story. And then I would encourage you to step back into that memory in your imagination and perceive it, because in sharing it, you're going to open that file in your brain and just step into that memory and say, what do you want to do now, Lord? A really good example of that can be, it isn't always true, but it can be for you to share your salvation experience. Because most of the time, people have a connection with the Lord during that salvation experience. And then have them step into that memory, review it, see the memory, and then see where the Lord is in the memory, and then begin talking to him out of that place, okay? So, again, we've talked about if you're going to go to a deep-seated traumatic memory, and that memory looks like the Grand Canyon inside of you, but your joy capacity is about half a cup, you're not going to be able to stay connected when that thing opens up, unless you have that tangible, experiential knowing that Yeshua or the Father or the Holy Spirit's with you. Because remember, they're not limited in their capacity. And when they're with you, you can lean on their capacity to go to those hard places. And his grace will be there. His grace will enable you to go to those hard places. So remember that if you're a facilitator or if that's you. If the person you're facilitating disconnects from the memory or from the presence of the Lord, then it's important that you as a facilitator help them reconnect to that presence before you try to go back into that memory. The key across the board is, can you perceive the Lord's presence? You might be a feeler, you may not see, but you can feel his peace because he's the Prince of Peace, or you can see him, or you can hear him, or whatever, however he's manifesting his presence. If that person doesn't have enough joy capacity to look at that trauma, then again, you as a facilitator can help them see and understand that the Lord has enough capacity for you, and he will give you what you need in order to look at the memory. And again, often I will say, would you like to get that four-year-old part out of that place, that memory, and bring that four-year-old out of that memory to the Lord in a safe place, to your safe place? That's why I always want to know, describe your safe place to me. I want to know what it looks like, where they're meeting with him so that if they get stuck or disconnect, I can say, hey, remember the beach? You've got that chair there on the white sand and the nice breeze and the sun shining. Can you see that? Let's go back there. I'll go with you. And primary priority for the facilitator is to help remove the things that hinder the person's relationship with Yeshua. I also want to remind you that the number one purpose of a God encounter is not for you to get healed. It's not for the person you're facilitating to get healed. The number one priority is for them to connect with the Lord. And you as a facilitator, you can help troubleshoot why they're not perceiving him. Sometimes it's they're afraid of what he's going to say. They're afraid that he's going to be mad at them. They're ashamed. They're guilty. And so you help them overcome those obstacles. Sometimes it may take a few sessions for dissociated parts to be able to connect with the Lord, and that's okay. Healing is the byproduct of spending time with Yahweh. So don't, as a facilitator, I'll rephrase it. As a facilitator, it's never the best thing for you to tell the person you're facilitating, do this or do that or don't, or to direct. You just don't direct. You don't. And if you believe you're hearing from the Lord, it's very, very, very rare that I'll say it in a session. I'll write it down. If I'm taking notes for them, I'll write it in their notes. And when it's all over, I will tell them what I heard back. But if I tell them what I believe the Lord's saying, it's not going to be as impactful as if they hear it for themselves. So it's just better to let them hear for themselves, and we don't tell them where to go, what to do. My number one question is, would you like to ask the Lord? Would you like to tell the Lord that? Would you like to ask him what you need to do? And if they can't hear, see, perceive, then I come in and, okay, let's find out what the blockage is. Would you like to ask the Lord what's blocking you from being able to perceive his presence? And let the Lord be the instructor, the director, the voice, right? In my experience, every single person who's been able to perceive the Lord's presence and process their traumatic memory with the Lord received the comfort that was necessary for them to be healed. Now, some people wouldn't go there. Some people chose to not be willing to do the hard work or look at. And in that case, they're not going to get what they need. It just won't happen. Once a person is connected with the Lord, the facilitator then takes a step back, so to speak, and simply prays while watching that person's face. And if there's an indication on their face that they're in distress or something's going on, then ask, hey, what's happening? What's going on? What's Yeshua doing? You know, and find out if there's a problem. If the person is connected and his or her face is calm, or there's peace on their face, or they just told you that the Lord's with them and nothing has changed in their expression, do not interrupt. Allow the Lord to do what he's doing. He doesn't need our help. Remember, sometimes the Lord's more focused on the relationship than he is on healing a particular memory. The number one priority is to simply be with Yahweh, and then the healing will come. And then I have a sample prayer there, and I see a typo. I saw it there on the third from the last line. It says, Lord, would you shoe me? That should be show me. So that's just an example, your own words. Ending the session, we always end with the Lord having the last word. So I will have them ask, Lord, is there anything else you want to show me or tell me? And they wait, and if he says, no, we're done, then you thank him and ask him to seal it. But if he says, yeah, here, and then there you go. You go follow whatever he says you do. Whenever a traumatic memory surfaces, the first thing a facilitator does is make sure the person is perceiving the Lord's presence. And once that is established, then you ask Yeshua for his leadership throughout the session. If the person experiences difficulties during the session, have him or her ask the Lord for help. Lord, what's blocking me? What should I do next? What do you want me to ask, Lord? What does this mean? Because if that person's Great Wall of China, if they're traumatized or afraid, they may not have access to their prefrontal cortex. So if you ask that question, what does this mean, that turns that part of their brain on, which can allow them to encounter him just with that one question. Now, I have here the five levels of pain processing pathway. You don't really need to know this. Some of you teachers out there, some of you who love to understand the brain, et cetera, will love this. So I put that in for you all. I'm not even going to go over it because it can. I debated, Lord, should I, shouldn't I? Because it can make you think. It could possibly make some people think this is too hard, this is too difficult, this is too much to learn, right? So there are five steps. I'll just give you an overview that your brain has to go through in order to process pain. And if you skip or get stuck on one of these levels, you won't be able to fully process that painful event. And it starts at the level one of your brain, and then once that level one, we'll look at this more next week. Once level one happens, then your brain shifts to two, then three. But if you get stuck on three, you're stuck on three. You don't go to four. You can't make it happen. Your brain won't do it. So I want to talk about on page 43, synchronizing with other brains, because this is a big deal. This is basically attunement. We've talked about attunement quite a bit because it is a big deal. Your brain, my brain, all of our brains were created with complicated neurological mechanisms so that we can synchronize with other brains. It's a proven fact that when you synchronize with another person emotionally, socially, and behaviorally, the chemical and electrical activity in your brain synchronizes with the chemical and electrical activity in another person's brain, the person that you're interacting with. That's pretty incredible and can be scary, you know? If that other person's brain isn't healthy and isn't thinking health, and your brain agrees, it could lead you down the path you wouldn't want to go. So this is called mutual mind state. Let's look at mutual mind state and interpersonal attunement. Interpersonal attunement is a special form of brain-mind synchronization. So when I'm attuning to you, I want to perceive and understand your internal experience. That means I really care about you. I'm glad to be with you. I see you. I hear you. I understand. That's attunement, right? And my brain wants that. And if you feel safe with me, your brain wants it as well. You don't feel safe with me, if a memory gets triggered because of how I look or how I talk or how I whatever, then you won't want that, and your brain won't do it, and my brain won't be able to, right? So, but I will, if I want that, I'm going to focus my attention on you. I'm going to really pay attention to your facial expressions and your gestures, your tone of voice, all those nonverbal communications to help me understand on a deeper level what you're feeling, what you're thinking, that whole internal reality. So when I'm attuning to you, I'm also seeking to perceive and understand your eternal experience so that I can share it with you and join you in it. So my brain, the reason my brain is wanting this information from you is because I want to partner with you. I want to be there, and I want to be able to lock arms with you. So my brain's seeking this information for that purpose. And that's a necessary element of attunement. If you and I are going to join in together right now, like Tammy's brain's doing with mine right now, and mine's with her, I can feel it, I know it, I see it, I recognize it. And the more you do this, the more you'll be able to catch it. You'll be able to notice that's what's happening. So I'm not trying to understand your internal experience so that I can figure out the best way to manage or manipulate you, right? But rather, I'm doing it so that I can share it with you and join you in it. This results in at least some degree of experiencing the same emotional state that you are in, whether it's sad, glad, mad, joy, whatever, right? This will at least partially activate my memories of feeling the same emotional feelings that you're feeling right now. And that's so I can join you in it. This results in me feeling to some degree what you're feeling. And then we can say, oh, I know how you feel. But then, here's the danger. Some people will say that, and then they'll start telling their experience, and then Tammy gets left out in the dust. That's not what mutual mind state is. Mutual mind state is you keep it about Tammy until Tammy makes it about me. And when she gets done, she's saying what she needs to say with her body language, with her tone of voice, with all of the things and words, then she may say to me, you said you know how I feel. You ever experienced anything like this? Then that's her saying, okay. And that's when I can communicate, yeah, actually, I have experienced that. So, it is so easy. I've really been trying, asking the Lord to help me be aware of me doing that. Where somebody will tell me, especially my husband, will tell me, you know, three sentences, and I go, oh, I know how you feel. I remember when da-da-da-da, and he's just, you know, because us women, we have more words than our husbands. So, and then he kind of just gets forgotten, because I can tend to be mission-minded instead of people-focused. And leave him in the dust. So I'm really asking the Lord, help me keep my mouth shut. Let him do all the talking. And if he wants me to talk, he knows how to get me to talk. You know, he'll invite me. But it really is a big deal. It's important for us. Now, all of this that I'm describing happens because we have something in our brains called mirror neurons. These are special nerve cells that are specially designed to help us both perceive and share the emotional experiences that we see on the face of another person. I may not experience the same intensity that Tammy's feeling. I probably won't be unless I get triggered. Then I might exceed her, right? But But I'm going to experience a measure of it, these mirror neurons. Attunement. The main and necessary component of attunement is, I'm glad to be with you. Remember? I'm glad to be with you. If this is missing, what we're talking about right now won't happen. You will not be able to enter into a mutual mind state unless you are glad to be with that person. And again, I can't stress this enough, that your prefrontal cortex is watching 7 times every second to see if you're glad to be with me. And if you're sitting across the table from somebody or talking face to face, you're going to be found out if you'd rather be somewhere else. You can't lie to that prefrontal cortex. Your words may say, I'm glad to be with you, but your body language is saying something different, or your eyes are looking all around the room waiting for an escape, or you know what I'm saying? So one of the things I've learned, when somebody has a hard time receiving attunement, I'm offering it to them, but I can tell, boy, they don't trust, they whatever. I will, on the inside, in my mind, I will begin to tell them, I'm so glad to be with you. I'll speak to their mind. I'm so glad. I really care about you. It really matters to me. I can tell that you're a little nervous, and that matters. I'm really sad that you are nervous, because I really am glad to be with you. And I'll do that. I'll do that verbally. And many times they'll, sometimes they won't, but many times they will. So you can practice that as well. Left eye to left eye, because if you look in their left eye, it's going to stimulate that right prefrontal cortex, which is where they can allow you in, so to speak, right? Okay, you know the main goal of attunement is I see, understand, care about your internal experience. I'm sharing in your emotions, and I'm glad to be with you, etc. Therefore, when I'm attuning to you, I'm also trying to communicate that I understand your internal experience and that I'm sharing it with you and I'm joining you in it and I'm glad to be with you. Now, that doesn't mean you have to agree with them. You don't have to agree with what they're saying or feeling. You simply have to be joining them. I can understand it. Doesn't mean you agree. And that's not the time to tell them you agree or disagree or tell them why that's not valid or tell them that's not the time. That's not what this is for. This is for them to be able to process their internal experience with a person. And that's important. And Yahweh created us with that ability. So once attunement happens, two people attune and they both can give and receive, then our brains and our minds are functionally linked. That's called a mutual mind state. Mutual mind state isn't just about feeling the same emotions, but the mutual mind state is more about we're actually sharing a functionally joined brain-mind experience. Our brains are talking to each other. And NASA actually has a machine that they could set up in this room and designate everybody's brain waves, because they're like a fingerprint. And then they could watch and mark whose brains are connected to who. Wow. Yours is connected to me because I'm talking, right? But mine is jumping around. Right? You're getting way more information than I am, like I said, but we still have a mutual mind state unless you disconnect or I disconnect because I stopped and looked over here instead of looking over here. But then we reconnect 7 times a second. Pretty incredible, huh? Yeah. This brain. So what happens if we are together and I feel excited and happy, but you feel sad? We can't have a mutual mind state unless one of us attunes to the other person. And if I attune to you, We will have a mutual mind experience where you share your initial emotional state of sadness with me. And if you attune to me, we will have a mutual mind experience where we share my emotional state of joy and happiness and excitement. If we both have the adult maturity skill, it's a skill, one of those 19 we talked about, it will be easy for us to go back and forth in regard to who receives the attunement. Who's going to go first? And when am I going to interject mine? Because we have that adult maturity level, skill level. And here's the maturity levels for you. Infant. If I'm at infant maturity level, I want you to attune to me. And it will feel really good when you attune to me, but it will never occur to me that I should then attune to you. That's an infant. That would be called, if you're an adult and you're stuck in infant, that would be called narcissism. It's all about me. I don't even have a clue that I need to make it about you. And that's how infants are. They don't understand yet. So a child, if I'm in child maturity, I will want you to attune to me, and it will feel very good when you attune, and I can attune to you after you've attuned to me. Take care of me first, and then I'll give you what I have left. Adult, if I'm at adult maturity level, I will want you to attune to me, and it will feel very good when you attune to me. And I'm aware that it's just as important for me to attune to you as it is for you to attune to me. And I'm okay attuning to you first, as long as I also get cared for eventually. Parent, if I'm at parent maturity level and you're my child, I will find it satisfying to attune to you, even if you don't attune to me. Elder, if I'm at elder maturity level, I will find it satisfying to attune to you, even if you don't attune to me, regardless of whether or not you are one of my children. So the goal is for all of us to get to the elder level security. Deborah needs a microphone over here, please.
So as you were stating that, like, an adult in the infant stage could be narcissism, could it also be like that person never developed that and they just need to? Like, let's say, like, they didn't, for whatever reason, like, through trauma, or, which I don't want to blame trauma for everything, but, like, maybe they just didn't get those skills and then they have to develop those later.
Absolutely, that's what happens. You are supposed to learn these as infants. Go to children. Your parents are supposed to model and provide these skills for you. If you don't learn them, then you get stuck wherever they lacked. And if you do get stuck at an infant level, that is narcissism. Whether you mean it to be or not, that's what narcissism is. It's being an infant, where give me, give me, give me, give me, can't ever get enough. Everybody's supposed to take care of your needs. Everybody's the source of my problem, you know. And that doesn't mean that that person is a bad person. It just means they haven't matured. Now, here's a problem. If you're an adult and you have this maturity level, it's very difficult for you to, first of all, even recognize it, you know, because that person blames everybody else for their problems. So when you try to tell them, well, actually, you have a problem here, they won't listen. Now, some will, depends on how deep they're entrenched. The nice, beautiful thing is you give your life to the Lord and everything can change and should change, because we learn No, no, I'm supposed to deny myself, pick up my cross every day and follow him. And so we go, okay, Lord, do that in me. And he matures us. And our community, if you didn't get it as children, your community is supposed to offer this for you. That's why it's not helpful to be part of a church or a community where the leaders aren't gentle protectors, but they're enablers. They don't like confrontation, so they ignore it, and then that's not helpful. But to see this and to lovingly say, you know, your maturity level that you're stuck at, it appears to me that you're stuck at infant or child or whatever. Would you like some help? Because this is the thing about these maturity levels with those 19 relational skills that I gave you last week, I think. You can't learn those in a book. You can't learn it reading about it. You can only learn them face-to-face, somebody modeling it for you. So somebody has to model these skills for you, and your brain, those mirror neurons, will go, oh, and it'll implant it, and you'll gain that skill. So it has to be learned by watching gentle protectors. Oh, boy, over here we got two hands. All right, I just opened something up.
So my question is about attunement. When you're dealing with somebody that maybe has been through SRA, all they know is manipulation and enmeshment. Sometimes in the beginning you're doing one thing, you're doing attunement, but they're looking for that in the not a healthy interdependence, but that unhealthy attachment. Can you address that?
That's absolutely true. Our job is to attune regardless of whether somebody receives it or not, with the hope and the prayer that one day a crack will form and they'll let you in. Because they're going to, especially SRA, where they've experienced unbelievable traumas, they're not going to trust anybody. And you got to earn their trust by being consistent and being a gentle protector and loving them enough to tell the truth and at the same time having healthy boundaries for yourself, for your community, for them. It's critical that is in place, and it takes time. But here's the thing I've seen. If you can, they may not trust a person, but if you can help them see that they could trust Yeshua, not Jesus, because often in SRA, Jesus figure has been the perpetrator, but Yeshua or the Holy Spirit, who's not a man. Sometimes Yeshua freaks them out because he's a man. But I tell them, well, the Holy Spirit is a spirit. He's not a man. So if you can get them connected with the Trinity and say, what have you got to lose? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's very complicated. But the Lord is not willing that any should perish, and he wants them to know him way more than they want to be known by him, etc. So, but you keep attuning, even if they can't receive it, and they can't attune back. If you just keep attuning. Julie had a question or comment.
I want to take a moment and worship him in this. When you said on page 43, so what happens if we get together and I feel excited and happy, but you feel sad? We can't have a mutual mind state unless one of us attunes to the other. And I knew the Lord dropped a verse right down, Romans 12:15. Rejoice with those who rejoice. mourn with those who mourn, live in harmony with one another, do not be proud. And I want to take a moment and just feel the pleasure of the gift of giving someone all the attention for a moment. Because I was telling Deborah while we were talking about this topic, I said, oh, healthy self-disclosure is such a art, isn't it? Because we're all dealing with brokenness, and you know, we want our turn to talk about it, but what a gift it is to restrain and watch him comfort and know that he's big enough to give us a turn when it's our turn.
So true. All right. Good. Everybody good? Okay. Attachment. Emotional attachment, also known as bonding, is one of the most important dynamics in our emotional and social experience. Bonding is the deep, enduring emotional connection between us and certain people who are important to us. When our attachments/bonds are joy-based, we want to be with the people we're attached to, and we will go to them for comfort and protection in times of distress. Healthy attachments. Yahweh meant for us to have deep, enduring, powerful emotional attachments in our relationships with our parents, siblings, spouse, children, and closest friends. If it's healthy, we will experience joy, glad to be with them, when you see these people. But when you are apart from them for any length of time and you see them, you will respond, I'm so glad to see you, or I've missed you. If those people are no longer in your life, you will feel sad and upset. You won't love them for what they do for you or what they give you. You simply love them because you love them. Amen. Right? So there's four forms of attachments. Didn't we go over these the first week or just a little bit? This is a much more detailed. Let's do it because this is a big deal. Now, let me say this about attachments. The good news is, even if you learn these fear-based attachments, which are dismissive, distracted, or disorganized, you're never too old to form secure attachments. That's the type of attachment Yahweh meant for us to have. But because of the fallen nature of man, we've learned dismissive, distracted, or disorganized. And you can experience different forms of attachments as you relate to different people. For example, with my mother, I formed one form of attachment, but with my dad, I formed another, a different kind. So I would switch back and forth. Same, and that's across the board, teachers or siblings. I had a different one with my siblings, different ones of my siblings, actually. So just remember that you aren't like, can only have one. And as we read this list, be honest, you know, and if you want to underline or whatever, those that you see in your life so that you can understand where you're at. Number one, secure attachments are formed by repeated experiences of having your parents attuned to you. That means see you, hear you, understand you, share your emotions, glad to be with you, and have them respond appropriately to you in all kinds of situations. I want to stop here for a second. There was a few years ago, somebody was telling me about a parenting book. I forgot what the name of it is, but it was all about when your baby cries, you don't respond. You let the baby cry it out. Or you go and you open the door and you pat them and say, you're fine, you're going to be fine, and you shut the door and go out. That is so unhealthy. That is so contrary to what our brains need, what Yahweh designed for an infant. You do that to an infant, and they are not going to form a secure attachment. They can't. So what makes an infant form a secure attachment is when they cry, when they fuss, they learn that mom or dad is going to come and help them, comfort them, change their diaper, give them a bottle or feed them or see if they're too hot or see if they're too cold. And when they get that, then they form that secure attachment that will go with them for the rest of their lives. Big deal. As that happens, these things all begin as infants. To this infant, that infant will feel safe to share his or her heart with vulnerability and transparency as that child grows. And they will have the expectation that the other person that they're with is going to see them, understand, attune to them, respond appropriately. In a relationship with secure attachment, you will be aware that conflict can happen, but you'll be confident that problems can be resolved and the relationship will remain intact, and you will have a deep sense of security. That's what Yahweh wanted for all of us. And we live in a fallen world, so it didn't happen. And this is consistently. That doesn't mean if you go, oh, man, I blew it yesterday. I didn't attune. Baby was crying. And you're going to miss it every once in a while, right? But this is overall consistently. Baby cries, fusses, complains, whatever. Mom or dad is checking on that baby, what's going on, and trying their best to solve the issue and let them know, I'm here, I'm glad to be with you. And again, not go in and fuss at them because they're crying again, or you, like I shared earlier about changing a poopy diaper and you make a face and go, oh, you stink, and how somebody had that trauma and the Lord healed them from that because mom did that. Or dad did that to them. So anyway,
okay.
Dismissive attachment is established by repeated experiences of having your parents ignore you, reject, dismiss the importance of an emotional connection with you. That baby will conclude, if I can't get it, it won't hurt as much if I don't need it or don't want it. So that VLE in that baby, as it forms, will tell you, you don't need emotional connections. You don't need to be accepted, loved, embraced. Trying to convince yourself, both consciously and subconsciously, not to need or want emotional connections. In most cases, you will develop dismissive attachment disorder because your parents have predominantly dismissive attachment. They don't need emotional connections. And they don't want it, which they modeled to you in their relationship with you. Distracted attachment is formed by repeated experiences of having your parents be unpredictable with respect to relational emotional connection. On some occasions, when you come to them with a need and desire for emotional connection, they will see you, understand you, share your emotions, join you in your experience, and want to be with you, and will respond appropriately. However, on other occasions, they are distracted and emotionally unavailable. In these situations, they might pretend to be attuning to you, but you can tell that they aren't. In a relationship with distracted attachment, you know what you're looking for, and you know that it's possible, but you don't know whether or not you will get the attuned emotional connection that you need. You never know what you're going to get. You can't depend on the person for attuned connection. You will have a deep subjective sense of insecurity regarding whether attuned emotional connection will be available when you need it. One noticeable characteristic of distracted attachment operating is you live in a state of chronic anxiety about relationship, and are preoccupied with getting more attuned relational connections. I'll give this food analogy to help you understand this one. If you grew up and you never had enough food, you will worry about your next meal before you even finish eating what you have on your plate. But if you've always had enough food, you'll take no thought about your next meal. People with distracted attachment have a deep subjective sense of insecurity regarding when they will get their next meal with respect to attuned relational connection. Therefore, they are chronically anxious about relationships and preoccupied with getting more attuned relational connection or getting a deeper relational connection with somebody. That is a great fertile field for codependency if you have distracted attachment. And you can find somebody else that has a distracted attachment, you're going to more than likely become codependent. The fourth one, disorganized attachment, is established by repeated experiences of a primary caregiver doing things that are overwhelming, frightening, and chaotic. Experiences where the caregiver that you want to go to for comfort and safety is actually the source of your distress. When this happens, you simultaneously experience both an intense attachment drive to be with the person who's your primary caregiver, and you'll also have an intense self-protection drive to get away from that person. You feel that something terrible will happen if you leave the person, and something terrible will happen if you stay. In a relationship with disorganized attachment, you feel that you must stay with the person to be okay, and you know that the person is unsafe and will hurt you. In addition to feeling fearful, you also feel profoundly confused and disorganized. That's a perfect setup for battered wives. So, the principle here is that your brain, mind, will produce customized attachment style combinations to fit any patterns that are consistent enough to be useful. So your brain's watching everything and figures out how to behave in all the different situations and scenarios that you are subjected to. It's important for us to remember that Yeshua is always with us. His presence provides the perfect conditions for building secure attachments. You can turn to him at any time and know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he will be there with you. He will see you, understand you. He will care about you. He'll share your emotions. He will join you in your experience, be glad to be with you, and he will respond appropriately every time. That's the good news, because you have to have somebody model a secure attachment to you for you to develop it. And it can be the Lord. It can be your best friend. It can be your spouse. It better be your spouse. I mean, if you want to have a really healthy, good marriage, both of you would have a good, healthy marriage if you have secure attachment. If you don't, you got some work to do.
Yeah, I went back to last week's material, and under dismissive, I'd underlined several things, and I wrote mom, and I'm distracted, same thing with my dad, and because I saw so clearly. And as an adult, I've gotten along with both of them. But, you know, as you grow older and you learn, so the question I would have is, and I've known people that have serious, like, mommy issues or daddy issues, and I wouldn't consider that's where I am, but it's like, is it, you started this discussion saying if you had these in the past, you can develop secure attachments. Is that with just going forward, or is there, and how important is it to go through and be able to understand what happened to you as an infant, and is it then to forgive the, say, mother and father, and move forward, or just address how do you look at that?
Yeah, well, it's always important to clean up and forgive and the past, if there's any wounding or hurt, always with the blood of Yeshua. It's not necessarily important to go back to your mom and dad and do it. That sometimes would just be a nuclear bomb that blows up. And if they have distracted or dismissive or disorganized, the chances of them wanting that now could be slim, unless they've healed and decide that they want emotional attachment, etc. So all you can do is you. So you can go to the Lord and say, this was my mom, this was my dad, this is what was modeled to me. So she would show me areas in my life. Where am I on this? That's the question now as an adult for us, not what they were. But if they were this, then there's a really good chance you learned that behavior. And there's a good chance that you could be operating in that in some areas with different people. You would respond differently.
Well, would you, if you're working with somebody or know somebody and you're starting to see things, is this something that you should, like what you're presenting here, share with them? To, again, to me it's very healing to actually understand. Because sometimes you're like, where am I?
Right.
What happened?
Yeah, I mean, and that would depend on your relationship with that person. If they're open to it and they want to know, absolutely. Because you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. You got to know it before the truth has power to set you free. But again, I want to emphasize, number one, identify what attachment style you learned because you modeled it from your mom and dad. That's mirror neurons. They're watching. They're modeling. And then once you realize, oh, man, I got all three of these fear-based attachment styles, take them to the Lord. Ask him to heal you, show you where it formed, get that all healed. And then that secure attachment is what we all want to be. That's called a gentle protector. And you learn that by being with other gentle protectors. And Yeshua is the best gentle protector that exists. So you spend a lot of time with him. You begin to look for people in your life that have those 19 relational skills are gentle protector skills. They may not have all 19. Yeshua does. We don't. But they may have the one that you need the most. When you look at that list of 19, oh, man, I'm really weak in number 7. So you look for somebody that you could hang out with, spend some time with, that is mature in number 7. And you will, those mirror neurons will model it, and it'll become autopilot. That's what we want, is autopilot. So, okay? But we all, our goal is for all of us to learn that secure attachment and to get healed from these other three fear-based attachments. So, good? Any other questions?
So if you find that you are with these four attachment styles, if you find that you are pretty prominent in one, does that then eliminate you don't need to look at the other three or all of them, huh?
Look at all of them because the chances that your mom and dad had the same one is probably not, or whoever your primary caretakers were. Now, if you were put in a nursery as an infant, you're not going to know. You mirrored whoever was, and you may have had three primary caretakers, and they may have all had the different ones. And it doesn't really matter who did what, but recognize what is operating in your life, how you are operating your life, and work on those.
Okay, because I was thinking, well, if this is, then I don't have to look at the others. Thank you.
No, like I said, I had dismissive, distracted, and disorganized in different areas with different people. I would just go to it's a brain thing. It's autopilot. That's what I call it. But our goal is that secure attachment becomes our autopilot. As we get healed from the other three and we are with people and we learn those 19 relational skills and set our hearts to mature into them. And it was, those 19 were supposed to be put in us as children. So, yep. All right, anybody else? All righty, we're going to stop here. And Monday we will pick up most likely here. And yes, we're ending.